Today, let's get deep and dirty into the high-rise problem. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by Edwin Almeida. Edwin? Oh, hello. That's not Edwin.
Oh, sorry, Martin, but Edwin is in hiding. it's me. It's El Ned, his cousin.
El Ned. Hello, El Ned. Well, nice to see you. I wasn't expecting that.
How are you, Martin? Good. How's it going in Australia?
It's all right. Yeah, we've had a few issues with buildings falling down.
I believe so. The news in Cuba here, they tell me that buildings are sinking in Sydney, burning in Melbourne, and they can't even build shit in Queensland. What's going on?
Well, what's amazing, I love the euphemism, right? The building is sinking slightly, or, you know, I mean, it's either moving or it's not moving.
I don't know, Martin, but here in Cuba, yeah, with all the sanctions we have from the United States of America, our buildings are still up after 100 years, and yours are falling down in 2 years.
Yeah, well, it's weird because I don't know what you think the life expectancy of buildings should be, but I would have thought, you know, 40 years minimum, right, should be a reasonable expectation. And here we are with buildings less than 10 years old, essentially now in serious difficulty. And, you know, as we've said, I guess, with Edwin a few times, that this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is a big deal. This is a big issue. And we haven't yet understood, I don't think, the fundamental underlying drivers of the massive issue that we now have. And it's going to be a massive financial impact as well.
Look, Martin, I guess I'll just come back on. I just kicked El Ned out.
Oh, hello, Edwin. That's better.
I got to fix my hair up again, a bit more gel there. didn't get a chance to get a haircut. I've been dodging and weaving all sorts of threats. Mm. That I've been receiving in the last couple of weeks, but
well, it, yeah. what's interesting is we need to understand the powers in play here, right? Because as well as the political dimension, there's a very significant commercial dimension, right? And then there are big players with big muscles, and frankly, you know, they don't really worry too much about who they upset in the process, who are trying to protect their turf. So it's not surprising, perhaps, that because you're in the crosshairs on all of this, that you're getting a bit of grief.
Well, exactly. Look, I've been in the crosshairs for quite a number of years, as you know, and it was especially not only from the construction sector, but also from my colleagues in the real estate industry as well, because we're not squeaky clean by all means. There's a lot of things that need to be sorted, and a good start would have been to bring the real estate industry into the Banking Royal Commission as part of the Banking Royal Commission, because obviously we are the ones that have been transacting on these quadrillions of dollars in properties that have been sold. If you look at the issues that have arisen over the three properties or towers that I've been sharing on my Twitter account, and that is, you've got Opal Tower, you've got Mascot Towers, and also the tower that is currently under construction in Queensland, the gross realisation across all those three towers is, you know, on or above $1 billion. So if they were to be resold again as, you know, in a new condition based on values, without taking into account the demise that they're under at the moment. So that's only across three towers, Martin. Now we're talking in the vicinity of, is it 1,000? Is it 2,000? Is it 4,000 buildings? I'm not talking about just individual apartments. I'm talking about buildings across Australia that have got inherent problems. Now, as of today, the ABC published a report saying that now the there are people coming clean with issues that they've had over, you know, developments, high-rise developments in Canberra. So we've got Sydney sinking, literally. We've got Melbourne's burning. Queensland, they doesn't seem like they know how to even build. And Canberra now it's falling to pieces. It's a systemic representation of perhaps the economy or where it's going, because this is going to have a huge impact on the economy, Martin.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And what's interesting about some of those recent images that you've shared is this is not an old building, right? This is a building currently being built, which tells you that these structural flaws are actually being incorporated into the way that building is, you know, being put together now, which is remarkable.
Well, that's correct. And as you know, because you've spoken to a whistleblower up there as well, and he's been trying to get the attention of the authorities. They've sent him packing. He hasn't been employed for the last 10 weeks. This is just shameful of what's going on. But then again, is it as we've said and as we've shared from last year that we were going to come to this point, and things have the chickens have come home to roost. So you water down the statutory warranties that builders and developers had in the past, and of course you're going to have these issues. Now, the discussion that I had quite a few years back on a radio station with a senior official with regards to even the dilution of the statutory warranties, as well as the bond that was going to replace the dilution of the statutory warranties, the 2% bond. I said, look, that's not enough. The 2% is just a drop in the ocean compared to what we're going to face, or owners corporations, unit owners are going to face in the future. And I recommended back then that at minimum it should be 10%, given the fact that real estate agents were taking, or marketing companies were taking, upwards of 8%, in most cases 10% as a commission. So what's 2% in the grand scheme of things? Look at it now. Look at the fiasco that's being faced now. Why? Because of the regulatory bodies that have diluted the protection to the consumer, and worse, the people in a way that are worse off, Martin, I feel, are the tenants themselves, because they've been kept in the dark, you know, like mushrooms.
Well, what's interesting, you know, one of the things as we've been discussing this for the last few months is we've had more people sharing insights and perspectives with us, and greatly appreciated. And, you know, we take all of the information that we receive in a confidential manner, but also it helps us to be informed. And there was a very interesting piece of research that was shared with me recently by an architect of 35 years standing, who basically said, look, you got to understand that this is not just, you know, some bit part players stuffing up. This is a fundamental soup to nut structural problem that we have in Australia. Essentially, we've got now buildings being designed to be engineered down to the absolute minimum. We've got essentially no overall process from beginning to end to look at how all the elements fit together. So we have various subbies doing various bits and producing pieces of paper. Those pieces of paper then getting subsequently signed off by other people. But nobody is actually taking accountability for the complete soup to nuts delivery of the particular building that's actually there. And that means that effectively the buck doesn't stop really with anybody, because essentially you've got people, you know, with bits of the puzzle, but nobody actually controlling it. And then, as you say, you've got the complete reduction of any protection for the consumer. And whilst there may be, in theory, 6 years or 10 years indemnity, right? Indemnity for what? To whom is the fundamental question, because it doesn't exist, right? And in particularly if you have a building company that is a shadow company that disappears subsequent. So effectively, whilst there is an attempt to try and deal with the immediate issues around, you know, the two or three buildings that we know about, and that's laudable, and absolutely those individuals need help, and the government will probably, you know, roll over and help a little bit more as time goes on. But unless this real structural issue is brought to the surface, we're not going to actually solve the underlying issues that we face, are we?
No, we're not. It's simple as that. But my mind goes into what's already being built.
All right.
The concerns there. And when Minister Kevin John Anderson spoke out at Mascot Towers on Sunday, and he said, you know, that this was that it was going to be a one-off. It was going to be a one-off assistance package for the residents of Mascot Towers. What about the rest? What about the rest of that are going to start surfacing and the people that are living in squalor in the million-dollar ghettos that have been built around Sydney? With regard to the design and construct, yes, it's all being ad hoc. It's been designed to the minimum standards, and that's what I've been saying all along for the last 8 years. In the videos that I've published in the last 8 years, I've spoken about the fact that the water tables. There's a lot of pressure on the water tables as you bring construction into these corridors, which are particularly, and in the most part, like Mascot, like Parramatta, are water tables and are floodplains. And we've been building on these, and we've been digging deeper, and we've been going higher with little to no controls other than pieces of paper that have been ticked off and signed off by private certifiers that don't even set foot on the on site. And as the architect pointed out in his correspondence to us, you know, with regard to there's one aspect of design and there's the other aspect of construct, and in between you've got every Tom, Dick and Harry that is supposed to at the end of the day produce or manufacture or build the pièce de résistance, you know. But what they've actually succeeded in building is leaning towers of Pisa's all over the place, all over the East Coast, which is shameful. Now, a lot of these properties, as I pointed out in my video from 2015 that I did with Jennifer Duke back then, and that was the million-dollar ghettos of Mascot, and that building where I filmed. What I was witnessing happening from back then, a building that was only 2 or 3 years old, how it was deteriorating, and that the quick pace that it was deteriorating, that building's actually next door to Mascot Towers that I did that video on. And yeah, you know, you've got all these tradespeople are supposed to finish off with, like I said, the pièce de résistance, but how? It's insane. And but what he's saying was that there are no real controls, which there haven't been. The statutory warranties have been diluted since 2012. Rather than putting in greater measures of control and keeping the developers and the builders keeping them in the loop. Long term, they've been given a golden pass by the regulatory bodies. Now, all this, Martin, you can imagine, you wipe off 50%. Now we're talking about Opal Towers, we're talking about Mascot Towers, and any other tower that's going to surface in the next 3 to 6 months, literally being worthless, literally resorting back to land value or less than land value, because the councils or the governing bodies will not allow them to build the same structures on those pieces of land. If they do allow them to build anything, it'll more than likely be only a third of the amount of dwellings that are currently standing. So the land value goes next to nix. So, and the other question is, would you buy? So this is going to have huge ramifications and implications on the economic side of things, and I don't think the government's got deep enough pockets to rescue the demise that's about to come. So it's going to be one huge economic mess.
Well, let's just do a few back of the envelope calculations, right? We know there's around 10 million properties around Australia, right? And you know, that's roughly worth about $6 trillion, give or take, right? If you sort of take the current values, right? And we know that around a quarter or a third of those are actually high rise, right?
Yes.
And particularly down the eastern coast, and, you know, particularly, I guess, Sydney, Melbourne, but now Brisbane, Canberra. But there's also been, you know, stuff being built down in Adelaide and even in the west as well. So let's take that six, and let's assume that a third of it is actually high rise or relatively new construction, right? So that yes. will be 2 trillion, right? Now, the question then is, what proportion of that stuff that's been built is faulty? Well, I don't know. Is it stupid to say, well, we could have faults in half the stuff that's been built? I mean, from what we've seen, that doesn't seem to me to be particularly sporty, right? But if that's
that would be generous, 50%.
Okay, all right. But that means that there is $1 trillion worth of value, which is effectively under threat, right?
Very much so.
And just that's the market value. That isn't the cost of fixing it all up, because, of course, if you're going to have to fix it up, you know, everything from massive remediation and, you know, moving people out through to breaking the building down and putting it back up again. And that is going to be ever so costly. So this is a huge economic impost on the economy at a time in the economic cycle when, of course, the economy is also already looking pretty wobbly. I don't think people have got their heads around the quantum of the issue we're looking at here.
No, they don't. And that's why I've said to a number of my colleagues and close friends and family, I've said across three buildings, potentially we've just had a wipe out of $1.1 billion.
Yeah.
So that's insane. We're talking about apartments particularly in the Tower in Queensland that were sold for $4 million, and they're still yet to be completed. When they are completed, those things are going to be worth peanuts.
Mm. Well, you know, yeah, and that's the point, right? So we're not just talking here about $300,000-$400,000 units. There are a lot of very flashy, high priced apartments up on the sort of the top floors.
Well, let me correct you on that, Martin. Yeah. It's not so much that they're going to be flashy. There are a lot of very expensive junkets that are being sold for high dollars.
Yeah.
That are not lasting more than 10 years in a lot of the cases. Mm. The other thing that our viewers need to also take into consideration is that a lot of the baby boomers or the people that invested the self-managed super funds have gone into a lot of these projects in Melbourne and in Queensland, and most of these high-rise developments have been built on floodplains and along riverbeds. So what, you know, where's all that going to go? They're going to go come to retirement with no superannuation funds at all.
Right, and I was going to make the point that a lot of the property is owned not by just individuals, but by investment funds and superannuation vehicles and those sorts of things. So even if people are not directly impacted by not owning a high-rise directly, the chances are that if you've got a superannuation fund run by one of these big organizations that run the funds, they will have a proportion of their exposure in the property sector, including into these sorts of investments. So I guess there's an interesting question. It will be interesting for people to actually contact their superannuation funds and ask the question, what proportion of my superannuation is actually invested in the property sector into these high-rise developments? Because, of course, they were sold as providing a long income stream over many years, and now it looks as though that probably isn't going to be as sustainable as people thought.
No, not at all. And even the people that got conned into putting together self-managed super funds and by mortgage companies that then took them to these developments and, you know, allegedly sold them the premium stock in the building. Mm. Well, guess what? It's all going to ground. Mm. And so you've got self-managed super funds. You've got fund management companies that have sunk a lot of money, a lot of the population's wealth into this Ponzi scheme. But then again, who are we? We're just the doomsayers again. We're just the ones, calling out in the desert, telling people to watch out as to what's to come. Mm. Unfortunately, just my mind is taken to when I was warning 6-7 years ago about the low standard of construction, although a lot of the stuff, as the architect was pointing out, it complies with the BSA, complies with the statutes or the codes, but to a minimum. But again, based on more so based on lower residential towers as opposed to what we ended up building, you know, three times as high and going three times as deep. Yeah. So, you know, my mind goes back to that point, and to bring to light the fact that the not only have we failed in what we've been building, but we've also failed in maintaining what has already been built, Martin.
Yep.
We've dropped the ball. And why have the government authorities, why have the government bodies dropped the ball on that? Because they don't get as much income out of maintaining existing dwellings as they do out of building new dwellings. So the gravy train, it was a lot better, was a lot bigger, was a lot faster in building new dwellings from you know, council contributions to stamp duty to GST. Everybody's feeding off this gravy train, and in the meantime, the dwellings that are available or have been built and have withstood the test of time, they haven't been refurbished to accommodate the predominantly, again, you know, tenants and people that are basically looking to, you know, a safe roof over their head. They haven't been maintained, so we've got issues with the existing buildings as well because they haven't been maintained, and it's pandemic. This we're at a critical point here, Martin. Economically, it's what do you do?
Mm. Well, yeah, and just, you know, you're making a really interesting point. So yes, we've got faulty design, faulty construction, and we've got those issues. But then you've got a whole bunch of maintenance issues. And those maintenance issues will actually flow over to properties, even if they were built right to start with, right? Because properties need to be maintained, right? They don't just sort of stand there and do nothing. They actually deteriorate. Simply because of that's always happens, right? So effectively, unless there are good, strong maintenance programs and the economic basis for running those programs, the chances are that existing properties that were built standard are also rotting.
Yeah, they are, and this is where, and we fail to continue to build something that's sustainable, something that meets the requirements of the Australian people. Mm. What we've been building for is we've been building for the Ponzi scheme, the overseas investors that have been duped in purchasing these properties, and we've lowered our standard to produce, to literally produce more than what's being required. And that's another interesting point that, as Catherine Cashmore has been pointing out for many years, and that the amount of vacant property around Australia is also phenomenal.
Yep.
And yet we continue to build more.
Well, as you know, the ABS in their last census showed that more than 1 million properties in Australia were vacant. 1 million. That's one-tenth of the total supply of property.
Yeah, and I think the those figures are also based on only taking into account electricity bills in terms of determining what whether or not there are people living in certain properties. Mm. Well, guess what? A few years back, a lot of these marketing companies and agents that deal with the overseas investors got a little bit smart as well, and they started putting in timers in the property so that lights can come on and off, and likewise. But there's one thing that you can't do, and a lot of these people that are looking after the properties for the overseas investors won't do, and that is go and turn on water taps. So you don't only just look at the electricity bills, but you also need to look at the water usage to determine how much. So you'd find that figure is probably short by about 300,000 dwellings. And yet we are continuing to build more of low standard and importing, as I said before, in that heated video with Uppercut Adams, which I keep on telling you, next time you want me to do a show with Uppercut Adams, I want to make sure that he combs his hair before he comes on the show. Otherwise, I'm not turning up. I do not want to be put next to somebody that does not fix his hair before he comes to the show.
Okay, well, point taken. But look, let's get back serious for a second. You know, from this point, what are the two or three steps that should now be taken to begin to actually turn this from a massive emergency into something which can be started to be controlled? You know, where would you go from here?
That is that is the $64 trillion question, I guess. Let's take it one step at a time. Let's look at, as far as I'm concerned, Opal Tower and Mascot Towers need to be pulled down. How long do you wait before they continue to sink and collapse? Now the pressure that Mascot Towers must be putting on the adjoining structures around there would be phenomenal with the displacement of the sheer weight of that building. And don't forget that we've also got the railway network right alongside it as well. So how much pressure is going to be there? When is it going to move? When is that going to move that millimeter to actually break into the railway tunnel? Is it going to be today? Is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be the day after? Yet the engineers are all the engineering reports and all the so-called fixes are on the surface. And I keep on saying over and over again, it's not what we see that needs to be rectified, is what we don't see. And what we don't see is below the foundation. You know, it's all the peering that wasn't done correctly. We know for a fact that the ground or the surface that the Opal Tower was built on, the shale, was of bad to low quality. So did they peer down below that bad to low quality level to hit solid rock in order to build the foundations from then upwards? Well, the fact of the matter is, the facts are there. If it's falling over, well, more than likely they didn't. I'm just saying. We've got a building now in Parramatta that was only meant to excavate three basements. They've actually excavated five or five and a half, possibly even six basements, and the water pumps that are put in place to obviously extract the seepage, because we're on a floodplain, we're right next to the river. The water pumps aren't adequate enough in order to pump out the seepage coming through into the basements, so they have to put in bigger pumps, stronger pumps, pumps that are more like diesel pumps in order to cope with the massive seepage. But guess what? There's no ventilation. The ventilation is inadequate. So if you park your car down there, you more than likely won't get to have dinner that night because you'll be overcome with the fumes. So they've got major issues. But yet, the developers are lobbying the council to add more units to that development. It's a mess. The construction standards are a mess. So what do we do? That's on an individual basis. Each individual property, each individual dwelling has to be assessed on its own merit based on what needs to be rectified. Not all the buildings that are above three levels are affected as much as what's being built now. Some are four levels, some are five or six. And the main problems that they have are predominantly waterproofing issues, water penetration issues from the top floor slab to the to waterproofing membranes breaking down because of used low quality membranes, and buildings shift and move and they settle. It takes 5 to 6 years approximately for a building to settle in some cases. So, and there's going to be movement. It's a rigid structure, so that breaks down the waterproofing. So there's some of the issues that some of these buildings have. So each building has to be assessed appropriately and accordingly. What needs to happen on a broader scale, Martin, is the government has to step in and increase the statutory warranties to where they were and beyond, to what they were from when they diluted them in 2012. They have to keep the developer and builder in play monetary wise. In other words, that 2% levy should be increased to no less than a 10% levy. Stronger statutory warranties that have got to be to give the buyers and to bring about some sort of confidence, because right now people are not confident. Levy has to go from 2% to 10% at a minimum, and that's when you're going to do away with all the fly-by-night developers that have come and gone. Now, the other thing that needs to come to play, Martin, and this is what I've also been voicing out a lot, and I've been the other snipers that have targets on my back are people from my own industry, because of what those relationships that strata management companies have in my industry with the developers and the builders themselves, and also property managers that do not disclose material fact to tenants. Now, that is that's another huge issue. Is that you've got strata managers not disseminating the proper information to the owners corporations, and the owners corporations not disseminating that information to the property managers, which then in turn don't get that message across to the tenants, to the renters, and yet the tenants are living in mold infested buildings with bad ventilation, buildings that are literally crumbling around them. So they're the ones that are living in danger. Now, I say that in the last 8 years, I can assure you that 90% of strata managers and property managers know about the material fact, but they have not passed it on to the tenants. So there's a huge breach of requirements, legal requirements that we have to adhere by, and in my opinion, property managers should be taken to task by the tenants. So if you're renting a property in these high-rise apartments and you feel that it's not deemed to be safe, it's not deemed to be fit and proper for you to live in, and there's been major issues that aren't being fixed, particularly with mold, bad ventilation and the like, well, take the property management team to task. And then, because they can't take the owners to task generally, because they've got to do it through the property managers. Then the property managers will throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I didn't know. Well, guess what, Einstein? Ignorance is no excuse. And more than likely, I say more than likely, particularly in the last 8 years, they know. They know what they're doing, and they know what they've been doing, and that needs to be sorted out.
Mm. Okay. And look, I guess my perspective is, you talked about councils, you've talked about the states, you've talked about, you know, the federal government, you've talked about the industry, the regulations, the building standards, the quality of construction, the legal frameworks around it. I mean, this is huge, isn't it?
It's mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling. But then again, how many videos have I put out there? How many discussions have you and I had about people that are looking to buy into strata complexes or just simply looking by old dwellings as well? So it's not just the new. We've talked about the low maintenance of a lot of properties around Sydney. But what has spurred on this is that gravy train that has been feeding so many mouths, and unfortunately leaving us to basically collect the pieces on behalf of everybody else that's come and gone and made the money and are disappearing.
Mm. Yeah. So, okay. When you would not buy a high rise or even mid rise at the moment, would you?
Anything above anything that's been built in the last 15 years, whether it be a high rise or a mid rise, or even a standalone home, I would have to do some pretty thorough research behind it before I bought. But in terms of high rise, anything above 5-6 levels, I wouldn't even entertain the thought of moving in, not with what I know is about to come. Because even if the building that you buy into is of good quality or good standard, it's going to have it's just going to be sucked into that vacuum as well. So, you know, but it's going to be case by case scenario, but definitely I'd steer away from anything above 5-6 levels.
Well, Edwin, I appreciate your time today, and I think a shout out again for those various people who provided us with information and photographs and documents to help us build the case. We will continue to push this issue because it's really, really critical, but clearly this has got to be embraced by federal, state and local government, and this is a big deal. It's going to play out over a long period of time, but economically speaking, this is a huge impact. Edwin, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. And my cousin had to take off, so he says adios as well. And hasta la vista.
Cheers to Ned as well. Okay, thanks, Edwin. See you next time.
Thanks, Ryan.
Cheers.